Hi, this is Corina Becco from Green Lantern Earth One, and you are entering the fan base.
Dear JJ, the world of my daydreams is as real to me as real life. It's not even a world so much as a multiverse. Layers stacked on top of each other, like the ruins of cities buried beneath newer cities. There are the things I imagine for myself, the things I imagine for others. There are the totally fictional worlds, and there are the fictional versions of real life. I add to it all the time, and I've absolutely created stories about the people I see in the street or on a train. I've seen things that have been lost on the sidewalk and invented the story of how it got there. My brain is always telling stories. And those stories always keep me entertained. Sometimes those stories provide necessary comfort, or guidance, or support. I genuinely love this about myself. I guess creators just can't help themselves.
It's just a little voice, and if you listen, my little voice that I've been missing.
Hello, hello. I'm Teresa Giacino, and welcome to Finding Felicity, where we're usually talking about life, love, and growing up, no matter how old you are, through the lens of the J.J. Abrams, Matt Reeves hit TV show Felicity. But right now, we are talking about the new Apple TV Plus show Little Voice, which was also created by J.J. Abrams along with Sarah Bareilles and Jesse Nelson. A half-hour comedy about singer-songwriter Bess King, a young woman with lots of talent but little confidence, navigating New York City and love triangles in a very Felicity way. Now, this is the third part of what was supposed to be a three-part series on the show that I am calling Finding Felicity's Little Voice. However, there's going to be a couple more, and it's all because I can't count, apparently. So when I originally wanted to do this, I was going to do three episodes, each one covering three episodes of Little Voice, because it's nine episodes total for the season. However, I didn't take into account that the first three episodes dropped at the same time. I was trying to count backwards from when they were scheduled to drop on Apple TV Plus, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, the episodes that I would be talking about this week, I thought I was going to have the last three episodes of the season, but I don't have them all. So there are two episodes that I can't talk about right now, but rather than make you wait, what we're going to do instead is have this episode along with the next two, that's right, there's two more coming after this now, each tackle one episode of the show. So if you haven't been keeping up and you want to get some context and jump back into it, you should check out episodes 23 and 24 of Finding Felicity. Those are the Little Voice-centric episodes that I've recorded. Episode 23 covers episodes 1 through 3 of Little Voice, and episode 24 of this podcast covers 4 through 6. And now we're going to talk about episode 7. Episodes 8 and 9 drop today. Episode 8 actually drops today when this podcast drops. And next week, the 21st, is when episode 9 comes out. So again, rather than wait, what we're going to do is talk about 7 today. Part 4 of the series will drop on Friday, August 21st, and part 5 will drop Friday, August 28th. So you have two more episodes of Finding Felicity's Little Voice, our little mini-series on this Felicity-esque show to look forward to. We hope you enjoy them, and if you don't, we'll be getting back to Felicity Season 2 in September, so don't you worry about that. But in the meantime, we are going to talk about Episode 7 of Little Voice's first season called Ghostlight. And that episode was written by Megan Kennedy, Jesse Nelson, and Sirocco Dunlap. And it was directed by Nelson as well. Now, if you care about such things, as always, I'm going to be talking about this episode as if you've already watched it. So spoilers ahead, etc., blah blah. And also, I never watch my mouth. So if you hear a cuss word you don't want to hear, that's on you. Yeah, because I always tell you every episode, I don't know when to monitor my mouth sometimes. Now, this episode opens with Bess learning what we knew at the end of the previous episode, that she left her notebook with all of her song lyrics on the subway, and she's frantically searching for it in her apartment. She wakes up, she's inspired to get some lyrics down, and she can't find her notebook. She's freaking out. She accidentally flashes Prisha's whole family when they all drop by for brunch. And annoyed and frustrated, she leaves, having managed to get a couple of scribbles for a song on an old takeout receipt. Meanwhile, Louis is getting help recording his King of Broadway vlog, but he and his roommate and cameraman Phil, played by Sam Lazarus, disagree on what makes for interesting online content, and they have a big old fight about it. That conflict, which culminates in the breaking of Sam's camera. Actually, I'm not sure if it's Sam's camera or if it's Louis's camera, but the camera gets broken, nevertheless. And that causes Bess to receive a phone call from Louis, as always, which she, of course, answers, and she goes over to his apartment. And Louis is getting reprimanded by his caseworker, Elaine, who's played by Becky Ann Baker. And when Bess tries to defend Louis, Elaine pulls her aside and tells her that she needs to, that Louis needs to be allowed to deal with the consequences of his own actions and handle his own conflicts and hurdles if he's ever going to get stronger and grow up. Bess gets super defensive and insists that she will always pick up his calls and never risk him being hurt ever. But now Bess isn't just stressed over Louis in this episode. She's also stressed over her songwriting. She lost her notebook at the worst time because Benny is actually turning into a really great manager, and he has managed to snag her several meetings with music industry people through various contacts, one of whom is Jeremy, smarmy Jeremy, and the producer that he knows. But with all of these people, she'll be able to play 5 songs, but she only has 4 that are current. She dare not play older material that doesn't reflect who she is currently. So now she's freaking out because she only has 4 songs instead of 5. She's struggling writing a new song, and that becomes a main focus of the episode. At one point, she's sitting in her apartment struggling to write when she notices a piece of wallpaper tearing. She peels it back to reveal another layer of wallpaper. Then she peels that back to reveal another layer. Her imagination then takes over, and she imagines the lives of the people who may have lived in her apartment before her, guessing at their personalities and stories based on the wallpaper. Those musings, coupled with inspiration from Louis's fascination with the ghost light in the theater, which is the light that's left on in a dark theater, either to calm evil spirits or, you know, for safety, that mention of the ghost light plus her ruminations culminate in this beautiful song about feeling invisible. Bess goes on all of those meetings that Benny set up for her and performs and performs and performs, but no one's into her. Not completely. Either they think she has a beautiful voice but needs to be paired with a, quote, real songwriter, or she's a great songwriter who needs a, quote, real singer to perform her stuff. Or, and this is kind of the overarching criticism, is that no one knows what to do with her. They don't know what to make of her. They don't know how to market her or how to categorize her, anything like that. Oh. And last but certainly not least, when she's feeling good and dejected about her prospects in the music industry, that is when she sees her father, who up until this point we've noticed taking sips from his flask at every opportunity. He's standing in a doorway drinking from that same flask, clearly drunk, clearly out of it. And when Bess goes to, you know, talk to him and try to take him home, he screams at her and goes through this hole in a fence and walks away to, you know, there's a bunch of unhoused people there in an alley, and he goes, you know, to hang out there, I guess, and be drunk. And she is understandably distraught and ends up going home with Sam to comfort her. So that is the basic rundown of what happened in this episode. And before we get into what I thought about any of it, here's a quick word from our illustrious host. And by host, I mean the actual host of this podcast, Anchor. Welcome back to part three of Finding Felicity's Little Voice. As always, I want to start out by talking about what I enjoyed about this episode, Ghostlight, episode 7 of Little Voices, season 1. First of all, my favorite thing about it is that it was light on Ethan. Ethan only had one scene. That's so great. But even better, it introduced a character that we haven't seen before, Ethan's grandfather, Arto, who's Latino, apparently. I don't know if he's supposed to be Latino or Spanish specifically, but he has an accent. He's played by actor Jose Ramon Rosario. So that was a cool surprise. So somewhere Ethan is Latino. This doesn't make me like him anymore than, you know, but whatever. I guess it's cool. I like his grandpa. Anyway, in a scene where Bess is trying to write a song, Arto comes up and introduces himself and contributes to Bess's song. And Ethan comes over and he's all embarrassed and flustered and is like trying to drag his grandfather away. But she's like, no, he's actually helping. Him, I don't have a problem with. You, on the other hand, who can't man up and talk to your girlfriend. Anyway, whatever. I don't even care about that storyline, so I'm not even mad. So light on Ethan. Yay. Secondly, my favorite thing about the episode, without question, is the scene where she's being inspired by the wallpaper in her apartment. I love it both because it's just beautiful in and of itself, and also because it gave this episode something different to work with. Up until now, the show has been pretty straightforward, and this is the first time where we see them playing with style a little bit. This is the first time we're seeing not just flashbacks or regular straightforward storytelling, but we get to see into Bess's imagination, which I thought was really cool. And I love the stories that she comes up with, that she sees these layers of wallpaper and she sees an unrequited lesbian love at an old-timey Jewish wedding. And then she sees a Latinx family, a mother with several kids. You know, at first the apartment is filled with joy and all the kids are happy and the mom is being fun and well, while she's cooking and she's everything feels jubilant and light. And then the father comes home and he's overworked and he's scowling and he's angry and he just brings the whole thing down and he doesn't notice his wife, even as she's dealing with all of their kids, cooking the meal, serving it. He doesn't notice her. And so these two things, the juxtaposition of these two stories that come to Bess when she sees these two different layers of wallpaper, both convey not being seen. In the Jewish wedding, we have these two lesbians who love each other, and then one of them has to watch the other one get married to a man, and this man doesn't know his wife. He doesn't see her for who she really is. And of course, the wife in the second story with all the kids and her husband not seeing her either. It was just a beautiful, well-done scene. I loved it so much and thought it brought a lot to the episode. Also, in addition to the artistic value in that, and the very real portrayal before she gets into the imagination, the very real portrayal of doing everything but writing. I related so hard to that. She's saging the apartment. She's eating chips. She's cleaning. Like, all, she's doing everything she can think of to stop from actually sitting at the piano. So that was relatable content. But in addition to those things, the thing that was also remarkable about that scene is that she gets a call from Louis and doesn't answer. And that signaled a huge amount of growth. She just got defensive over this very thing. But now she's like, you know what? Maybe this caseworker where Elaine had a point that I should let Louis handle his own problems. I don't have to jump every time he calls. If it's an emergency, I can go over. But in not answering that phone call and putting herself first, it was a huge amount of growth for her. So I liked seeing that. Speaking of Louis for a second, I love that he is better about using the internet to explore the stuff that he loves than Bess is. I think he, like, that's probably the most honest portrayal of how one might use YouTube that I have seen on this show. And I love that Prisha is into it. Like, Prisha is watching his vlogs and, like, can't look away. And she genuinely likes it. Like, obviously, these videos are ridiculous. Like, having Louis doing both sides, both halves of Aaron Burser and performing that. Ridiculous and hilarious, but they're sweet and they're fun. And I could absolutely see these videos going viral in a genuine way. Like, not just, you know, partly because they're terrible, but partly because they come from a place of genuine, you know, fandom and geekery. And I think people would totally watch this video just to watch him love Broadway so much. And of course, there'd be assholes commenting asshole-ish things, and Louis would probably turn off his comments. But be that as it may, I feel like people, more people than not, would love these videos that he puts out. And I just love the portrayal of that on this show. Something else I love about this episode, I love that Bess finally told off Jeremy. Though I'm not thrilled with how it happened, so we'll save my full discussion about that for the second half of my kind of review, I guess, in the stuff that needed work section. But I am glad that it happened. I'm glad that Jeremy finally has been put in his place and knows that you can't just be touching on people and offer them meetings with producers just to get what you want. It's like, no, don't do it. Something that really was genuinely heartbreaking was that scene at the end with Percy and Bess, with Bess finding Percy on the street drinking. Brittany O'Grady's performance in that moment was beautiful. And, you know, both of their performances were great. And that moment was just so emotional and so real. And it was real, like, the way it was directed too. Nelson did a great job of kind of crafting that moment. The way that it was scary, but not overblown. It was clear that this is something that Bess has seen before. And so she's scared, not just because of what she's seeing and her dad kind of, you know, yelling at her in this moment, but it's kind of like she's seeing every single time this has happened. And it must be multiple times. So there's this fear of him reverting back to something that she thought was gone. So it was scary without being overblown. It was great for the character. It shouldn't be a novelty, but it is, to see female characters going through stuff that doesn't have to do with romantic relationships. It's like, here's something that she's dealing with that has nothing to do with who she loves or doesn't love. I mean, it is someone she loves, but it's her dad, and it's a serious kind of family situation that she's going through. I love that. And I wish that the show, well, no, actually, I take that back. I was going to say, I wish the show leaned into that more, but it does. It's a big part of the show. Clearly, her feelings about her mom, her feelings about her dad are things that she's struggling with even as she's going through all these other things. It's kind of always the undercurrent. And that's great. I love that she has more going on than just her songs and just this love triangle, which is stupid. By the way, the song that she ends up writing called Ghostlight, and I will, you know, put a link to it in the show notes. Ghostlight is a solid song. It's a beautiful song. And again, I feel like they started out the series with the weaker material. And as the show has progressed, it's kind of put its stronger material toward the end, which I guess is wise. You want to, you know, end on a high note so that that's what people remember. My only concern is that having the weaker material up front might make people not stick around for the stronger material later. Now, something else I love, I think that Indie Pop Happy Sad would have been a great alternate title for this episode. And I loved when they went to talk to the assistants at a record company in the hopes that they would pass Bess along to their bosses. And they don't know how to categorize her, but she's like, you know, I'm indie. And then Sam is like, but also pop. And she's like, happy and sad. And Indie Pop Happy Sad is what they write down. And I thought that was great. Lastly, going back to Louis, in the moment where he has his fight with Phil over what constitutes interesting, Phil says something like, that's too many details. That's what I'm trying to say. And Louis says what I think is the best line in the whole episode. They say God is in the details. That's what they say. And I just love that retort to Phil and his catchphrase. That's what I'm trying to say. Anyway, best line in the episode, holler. Now here's what the show could do a little better. I do want to get back to the Jeremy thing. Like I said, I am glad that Jeremy got told off, that Bess was like, you know, no, don't do this. At the same time, I kind of wonder if that would have happened had she had a good meeting instead of a bad one. I wonder if the producer had loved her and wanted to work with her and known exactly what to do with her, if she would have kind of not forgiven Jeremy, but brushed it aside and continued to have an acquaintance with him if the meeting had gone well. The way it was kind of presented, it seemed like, oh, now she can tell Jeremy where to go because it didn't turn out well for her. Like his lead, his producer, didn't turn out well. So now, you know, she can tell him to fuck off. And I don't like that. I wish she would have told him regardless. I wish she would have risked something in telling him. I wish she would have told him off before the meeting. Also, her telling him that was very abrupt. Like, I didn't see any lead up between her being fine with it and her telling him off. And that seems to be kind of a problem throughout the series. There seem to be these gaps where stories should be. Not that we need everything blueprinted out, you know, every, you know, major development or whatever, but like usually there's a moment, like a midpoint between, you know, A and C. There's usually a B, and I feel like there are a lot of B's missing. Like with the situation with Jeremy, it's like in the last episodes, the couple of episodes before this, she'd kind of resigned herself to the fact that, you know, she's willing to put up with this because it'll get her what she wants. And she sees it, you know, she sees it head on. So she's like, listen, this is just how it is. I don't know how she gets from that to suddenly being like, don't touch me, Jeremy. Like there was no, we didn't see that development happen in her. It just kind of happened. I don't know if this is a script problem or an editing problem or both. But for example, the other thing that I've mentioned in a previous episode, we go from her entering the songwriting contest in Dear Hope, at the end of Dear Hope, to her claiming the top prize in the very next episode. Like it opens with them going to Electric Lady Studios. But we don't get to share in her moment of triumph when she learns she wins. And I'm not saying that has to be a big drawn out thing, but like when she entered that songwriting contest, it was a big deal. That was her putting herself out there. So her getting the news that she won, like, I feel like that should be a moment that we see. And it's, and when I watched the following episode where she's going to the recording studio, I almost forgot that that's why she was going there, that that was the prize that she won, because nobody referenced it. It was just like, here we are at Electric Lady Studios. Jeremy makes when they first meet, and he says, who won me? And that was when I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. This is, you know, this must be the prize. I guess she won the song contest. But I had to make that assumption for myself. Nothing, you know. I was confused at the beginning of the episode. Like, why is she here? We learn in passing that Benny has been hustling for meetings, but we don't actually see him growing into this manager thing by making those meetings happen. That's something with Benny that I'm kind of struggling with in general. I think this character deserves better. He's like a great, he's a good guy. He's not interested in Bess romantically. I mean, I guess that's why the show is ignoring him, because why bother with a character if it's not a love interest for Bess? Especially if he's male, like the male characters who aren't in line to sleep with Bess are kind of inconsequential. I don't think so. I think Benny deserves more to do. And I would love to see him like getting all of these contacts and like making it happen so that he can go to Bess and be like, yeah, I got all this for you. But he just kind of shows up to facilitate Bess's life. I think that could be better. Okay. So we've talked about the story gaps. We've talked about Jeremy and how I didn't think that went as well as it could have, or was written as well as it could have been. But now I have to talk about Sam, because from the beginning of this podcast, basically, I've been kind of team Sam. Like, if she's gonna be with either one of them, and I hate love triangles to begin with, but if she's gonna, quote, pick one, I liked Sam. But recently, in the past couple episodes, Sam has been doing that nice guy shit that just pisses me off, and this episode was kind of the epitome of that. So at the end of the episode, when Bess sees her dad drunk, she's crying, she's distraught, and Sam, you know, goes to comfort her, and she's like, no, no, I gotta go, I gotta go. And he, like, basically insists on comforting her. And I get it, you know. You want to hug your friend, pull her in, make sure she's okay. But then cut to, he's at her apartment, and they're spooning and holding hands, and he's kissing her on her shoulder. Like, when did they get that relationship? Like, so here's this crying girl crying over her drunk dad, getting comforted by her friend who up until this point she has shown zero romantic interest in. And all of a sudden they're spooning in bed, like, what, platonically? Like, I don't, like, if you have a guy friend and you're not looking to bone, that's not a thing that happens. Like, generally, like, even if he came home with her to comfort her, make sure she was okay, have a drink with her, whatever, like, spooning in bed and kissing her shoulder, that's like jumping 50 steps ahead in their relationship as it stands now. And I thought that was ridiculous. And also I thought it was Sam taking advantage of a situation to like put himself in a romantic spot to get in line for Bess. And I thought that was kind of shady. Like, now is not the time, dude. And yet he's got his arms around her and holding her hand and kissing her shoulder. And I'm like, that is too intimate a gesture for this moment for you, sir. So that really, really pissed me off. I don't understand how they got there. I don't think they should have gone there. And I feel like they're just trying to speed things along, because apparently she can't leave this season without a love interest. And so they had to speed things along rather than have them develop organically, because they know by the end of the season, they want her to be with someone. And they're two episodes away from the end, and she's mad at Ethan now, so I guess it has to be Sam, and we gotta shove that in there. Hated it. So now that I've talked about all the things that made me mad, I do want to get into a little bit of some thoughts I had about Felicity in relation to this show, as well as some other stuff. But before any of that, let's stop for a word from our awesome, awesome friends at Fanbase Press.
Hi, this is Barbara Dillon, one of the co-hosts of Fanbase Press's flagship podcast, The Fanbase Weekly. During the Fanbase Weekly podcast, the co-hosts and I discuss the top geek news stories of the week. In each episode, we are joined by special guests from all across the pop culture spectrum to get their take on what's happening in geekdom. Past guests have included Jeffrey Thorne, writer of Leverage and The Librarians, Debbie Lynn Smith of Chimera Press, Xena Warrior Princess executive producer Stephen L. Sears, Jason Inman, and Ashley V. Robinson of Geek History Lessons, and many, many more. Join us for an episode of the podcast that celebrates fandoms on a weekly basis. A new episode of the Fanbase Weekly is released every Monday. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or look for the podcast at fanbasepress.com.
Welcome back to part three of Finding Felicity's Little Voice, the little podcast miniseries we are doing talking about Little Voice, J.J. Abrams' show on Apple TV Plus with Sarah Bareilles and Jesse Nelson. As you may have gathered by what I said just earlier, I really, really loved the scene in this episode with the wallpaper. And it reminded me of the Felicity episode, The Force, what with its dabbling in something a bit out of the ordinary, despite being a supposedly grounded show about a normal girl in the city. If you will recall, in The Force, Megan casts a spell that may or may not be the reason why Felicity and Ben had their romantic moment. And so it introduces this element of magic into the show. Completely randomly. They just decide that Megan is one of those college girls who decides to dabble in witchcraft. And they decide to kind of give it credence and make things happen because of it. And so Ben and Felicity's first kiss could be the result of Ben actually having feelings for Felicity, or it could be a magic spell. Be that as it may, it kind of introduces, you know, it plays with form a little bit in that it has these chapter headers with tarot cards and all of this, plays with form in a way that it hadn't really done prior to this episode. And so this episode, Ghostlight of Little Voice, is kind of the same, where this is the first time we're seeing something stylistically different for the show. And it makes sense that we would see both of those things. Both Felicity and Bess are creative people. Felicity is a visual artist. Bess is a singer-songwriter. But both of them are creative people. And so it makes sense that anything telling their story will play with form, would be experimental in a way. And so it makes sense that this episode, where Bess is dealing with her creativity and kind of wrestling with it, that we have this moment seeing, and it's kind of like a slightly magical realist moment, see this moment where we're allowed into Bess's imagination and we see how she sees the world. It makes sense for a creative person's story to show us the world in a different way. I mean, creative people, artists of any type, tend to see the world differently. And so why shouldn't an episode structure be different? Now, just as I know that I have a Twilight Zone episode of Felicity to look forward to, again, I've been spoiler-free since 2003 on that show, but I do know certain things, like there's a Twilight Zone episode. Just as I know I have that to look forward to, I hope that Little Voice will take more stylistic choices, chances like this, or make more stylistic choices like this, because it's cool and it's relevant to Bess and her creative brain. It was unexpected and a nice little jolt, and I love how both Felicity and now we're seeing with Little Voice that both of these shows do that, and I hope that continues with Little Voice. I don't know if anybody's listening to me, listening to this podcast, but if you are, anybody who's working on creating Little Voice, definitely do more with that. I would love to see more of Bess's inner world as she's writing her songs, as she's daydreaming, whatever it is, finding that visual language and just really going with it would be a lot of fun. And I think take the show up a notch. We always kind of get into, you know, how the representation is on the show of people's lives in their 20s. And I have to say that I still really don't buy her need for record company approval at this point. Obviously, a record deal with a, quote, real company would be huge for anybody. But so many of today's major label names got famous and got those deals with those big companies because they built followings online. And so it's weird to me that everyone around Bess is so ignorant of how to, for example, promote her music video, or that no one's telling her how to, that she should be posting videos of herself singing, whether she's singing covers or singing her own material, that she's not building that fan base. The fact that no one has brought that up to her, it feels really out of sync with what I see actually happening in music right now. And I know she's supposed to be, you know, quote, not like everybody else. You know, she's kind of a grandma in so many ways, but she's not an idiot. Like, and the people that she's working with, these musicians that she's working with, supposedly work with other musicians. Like, you think someone would say, hey, maybe you should do this more. Maybe you should use this tool. Maybe, record companies are not the be-all and end-all. And I thought that's where they were going with the music video, but they just kind of let the music video sit there and are just kind of watching and hoping that it will get views, as opposed to actively promoting it on social media and like making it a thing, trying to get it out there. Viral videos don't just happen. They're, you know, they're initially promoted. Also, just side note, so far she's had only one live gig that didn't even pay her. It ended up being a free gig that she did, where she performed for like five people, and suddenly she's in the room with record executives. I know that Benny is hustling. I know that he's doing his thing, but also like we don't see Bess pursuing other live gigs. Like, she did this one gig and like that's it. Like, we don't see her trying to sell herself to other clubs, to different venues. Something feels off about this thing where it's just like, I have to go from zero to record deal right now, and there's no hustle in Bess, which I feel like anyone else of her age with her talent, even if they're insecure about what they can do, would be using other tools and doing other things to get their music out there. Anyway, the other thing that occurred to me when thinking about representation of, quote, our life in our 20s, generally we talk about it, you know, in a general way. We, you know, the common experiences that all of us have. But I would also love to talk about it in an intersectional way, specifically, you know, for example, where it comes to Louis. What's it like to be in your 20s with a disability, with neurodiversity, you know, and we've already got like different races and ethnicities. We have Krisha's story where we're dealing with what's it like for her to be an American daughter in an Indian immigrant family. And I would love to hear more about that. So if anybody listening can speak more to those experiences, if there's anybody listening who happens to be on the autism spectrum, or if there's anybody listening who does come from an immigrant family and wants to talk about it, I would love to hear about what people think about this show's portrayal of life in your 20s when we're not just talking about the generic experience. So yeah, you'll be hearing all about the ways to contact us in a minute. So I hope that you will take advantage of that and reach out, because I want to hear more about the experiences that I don't have. Next week, I'll be talking about episode 8 of Little Voice's first season called Sea Change. And right now, we actually have 2 Spotify playlists for you inspired by the series. Our Hopeful Voice playlist, which was for our first episode, and our Angry Voice playlist. I'll put the link in the show notes for both of those playlists. We've gotten some great contributions from listeners on what to add for the Angry Voice playlist. And I added some stuff myself as well. And I just want to shout out, because a lot of the songs are very typically, you know, angry, like Move Bitch, Get Out the Way, and Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit. So some of the songs are very like, and Killing in the Name, which is one of my additions, but it's just, you know, obviously an angry song. But I also added 2 other songs, Love Song by Sarah Bareilles and Pumped Up Kicks by Foster for the People. And both of those songs on their face don't sound angry. But one of the things I love about Bareilles' Love Song is that it's basically a fuck you to her record company. From what I've heard about that song, she wrote it after they were not happy with the stuff that she was sending in. The song, you know, Love Song is basically like, oh, you want me to write you a love song? Here it is. Fuck off. Like that. And so I always think that song, you know, that song comes from a place of anger, even, and even the lyrics are angry. Like this is her, you know, the person in the song is writing to someone who wants a love song from her, but maybe doesn't deserve one, and expects that of her. And she's like, no, I'm not going to write you one until you give me a reason. So it's an angry song. And I always love how people like play it at weddings and like it's in cute commercials. And I'm like, y'all aren't listening to this song. It is mad. Anyway, so that's that one. And Pumped Up Kicks, you know, is a song about a school shooter. And it sounds all sorts of peppy and like, you know, it sounds peppy and happy. I actually had a friend just recently, like a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine that I know from college, who said to me, like, you know, she texted me, did you know that Pumped Up Kicks is about a shooter in a school? And I'm like, yes, I did know that. I've known that for years. I've known that since the song came out. But it doesn't get talked about that way. Like, there was no controversy about that song when it came out. And I don't think people listen to lyrics, and it annoys the hell out of me. Just as a writer, like, the fact that people don't pay attention to words annoys me. But yeah, so many people, like, bop to that song and then be shocked when they find out what it's about. And I'm like, you'd know what it's about if you listen, because the song tells you with words. Anyway, those 2 songs are on the Angry Voice playlist, and hopefully you will enjoy them and all the other selections on there. Each of the playlists has about 14 songs on it, and you can still send in through our various channels all of your selections if you want to do that. I'd be more than happy to add to the playlists as we go, and yeah, those are there for you whenever you need them. If you need to explore your hope or express your anger, we've got music for you. And right now, I want to leave you with another musical little question. This week's question is, what's one song you'd put on your creativity playlist? This episode leaned hard into Bess's process, and I know that for so many of us, myself included, music can inspire creativity in artists of all kinds. So let me know what song you need to have going when you need to get the creative juices flowing. What songs on your creativity playlist? You can shoot those to me by emailing us at findingfelicitypod@gmail.com, by tweeting us at findfelicitypod, or responding to the discussion threads on our Facebook page or Instagram with the hashtag #littlequestion. Or you can send us a voice message that we might include in a future listener feedback segment with your creativity song and what about it gets you inspired, gets you ready to create. You can
head over directly to our Anchor homepage. The link will be in the show notes, and leave us a voice message there. There's a button that says message, click it and you're good to go. You can also send us messages with questions or comments about Felicity, about Little Voice, or anything else really, and we'll do our best to respond. Support Finding Felicity by visiting our Pamanok Entertainment Patreon. If you want to support the podcast or any of our other work, visit patreon.com/teampamanok. As for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Teresa Giacino, or check out my personal website at teresagiacino.com. New episodes of Little Voice drop every Friday on Apple TV+, and new Finding Felicity episodes, like the one you've been listening to, also drop on Fridays. Finding Felicity is part of the Fanbase Press podcast network and is co-produced by Fanbase Press and Pamanok Entertainment. Our original Finding Felicity logos were created by Noel Rivera, and the special logos for this mini-series were created by Fanbase Press's Barbara Dillon. The snippet of the Little Voice theme that we use at the top of these episodes is written and performed by Sarah Bareilles. Subscribe to or follow Finding Felicity on Spotify or iTunes so that you never miss an episode. And please, if you are listening to us on iTunes, rate and review us to help other folks find us. Wherever you're listening, if you can give us stars, likes, hearts, whatever system they use, do that, review us, and let people know how to find us. That would be greatly appreciated. And as always, you can listen to the latest Finding Felicity at fanbasepress.com and pamanokentertainment.com. And if you want to keep up with all things Pamanok, you can follow us on all socials at Team Pamanok. And Pamanok is P-O-M-O-N-O-K. See you next time on Finding Felicity, because coming of age never seems to stop.
This has been part of the Fanbase Press Podcast Network.